Hello and welcome to Inside Network Marketing. This is your host, Len Clements. I am the founder and CEO of MarketWave. You can check my company out and everything that I do at marketwaveinc.com. And my curriculum vitae is there with all the reasons why you might want to give any credibility to anything that I say. Check it out there. This is actually show number two, this February 21st, 2009. And I made the promise in the first show that I'm going to try to keep all these to under an hour. And what I've got lined up for today's show is probably going to take way longer than that. So I'm going to get right to it, talk kind of fast, and probably leave a bunch of this out until the next show, which at this point looks like maybe I can do about once a week. They told me in public speaking class back in college, but basically what I'm supposed to do is tell you what I'm going to tell you, then tell you, then tell you what I told you. That's the basic outline of a speech or a presentation or lecture, things like that. Well, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to tell you, and then I'm going to tell you, I'll probably skip the part about what I just told you since it's a podcast and you can just rewind it and listen to it again. But basically, I'm going to give you an update on some news items we talked about in the last show, considering MLM bigotry. Got some more information for you on that. And also a little update on the Jiri meltdown, as it's being called now. I got a lot more information on that. In fact, probably enough to do a whole show on. So I'm just going to give you a little teaser about what I'm digging up with that. Because right now it seems like the more I dig, the more dirt I find. I tend to fall on the distributor side of these issues. I was leaning a little on corporate, as you may have noticed from the last one. I'm a whole lot on the side of corporate on this one now. So we'll catch up on that a little bit. Also, we've got some new news. Some of you old grizzled veterans of network marketing may remember a character by the name of Greg Caton. He wrote a book called MLM Fraud back in the mid-90s, and he's back in the news in a rather unusual way. So we'll talk a little about him. And also Kevin Trudeau, the king of infomercials. Apparently the FTC has finally had enough of him completely. So we'll talk about what's going on with him. Barry Minkow is back in the news again. He has turned his sights away from network marketing companies after failing miserably to get them shut down, although he successfully dropped their stock and made money on it, which is probably his intent. But went after a bunch of non-MLM companies and some easy pickings and got their stock to drop and made some money on them. And now he's got his sights back on, apparently, network marketing companies. So talk about that. Speaking of network marketing companies and ex-Minkow victims, USANA Health Sciences just had a large judgment against them in a wrongful termination suit, which seems to be getting a lot of chatter out there in the industry. And we'll talk about that a little bit and what I know about it. And also a little thing called XGO Pro, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Apparently, a company that's totally separate from Zengo, nothing to do with corporate, has figured out a way to network market, multi-level market, their tools and training. Zengo tools and training. They're going to MLM that. And also, I got something coming up. Probably we'll talk about this a little before the break, that I think is going to surprise you, something I've determined as far as a tax benefit for us network marketers, way more than anything that we've ever already known about as far as tax benefits for being a network marketer. It's something that I've been using for about 4 years now. 2008 will be my fifth year of taking this deduction. I really wanted to make sure that the IRS was fine with it, and I talked to a lot of people to really check it out because it just seems a little too good to be true. And one of those kind of things like, well, if this really worked this way, why isn't the network marketing industry and every company and every trade organization just all over this and basically no one saying a word about it, like nobody even knows about it? So I really wanted to make sure it was safe for me to expose this to the industry, and I'm going to do that for the first time on today's show. And it's a way for you to save a whole lot of money on your taxes, perfectly legal, in a way you've never known before. And and you're going to think it's too good to be true too, but I'll tell you where I got the information and how to do it. So let's get right to this. I want to just kind of start off with a fun little thing here. I'm going to kind of pay homage to Paul Harvey, who I'm quite a fan of, so I give credit where credit is due, so he doesn't think I'm ripping off a trademark here or anything. I'll tell you a little story that you might find interesting. There's something down in Australia, down under, that they call, I believe if I pronounce this correctly, Anzac Day, A-N-Z-A-C, and that's April 25th. Now, every year, they do that to kind of remember their fallen diggers, they called them. That's soldiers to us, but they called them diggers down there, D-I-G-G-E-R-S. You know, it's kind of like our Veterans Day. So every April 25th, they have this Anzac Day. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Down in Australia, where they, the Australians, the New Zealanders, who fought in Gallipoli. On this day, they have marches in the streets down to the various city capitals. They have dawn services. And another unusual thing is that at midday on these days, all the pubs open across Australia, and they play a gambling game that's only legal to play on just this one day. This is actually a true story. It's an even money gambling game. It's very simple to play. It was originally played by the soldiers there in Australia. It's how they do it is they take it's a big square and somebody stands in the middle of it and they take 3 pennies. They throw it up in the air and they watch how they land and then two people bet. And you bet on how you think they're going to come up heads or tails. Now, you can bet all three heads or all three tails. Of course, nobody usually does that because that's a pretty long bet. You'll probably lose. But the even bet, and it's totally even money. The house doesn't get anything on this. It's just a straight even money game. If you bet two heads and one tails, that's what it comes up with. You win. If you bet two tails and one heads, you win. The other guy loses. Very simple even money game. And the name of this game is called Two Up. And it was invented, in fact, in Australia. Only now you know the rest of the story. All right, so there's my trademark violation. I thought that was kind of curious. I want to give credit here to old subscriber of ours. If I pronounce your last name incorrectly, Bob, I apologize. But Bob McGuire, down in Australia, has sent me that little bit of information after I wrote an article stating my opinion of Australian two-ups, which isn't very kind, actually. I don't particularly care for those types of plans. Actually, there's an article called about Australian two-ups in the article section of a MarketWave website. You can find out why I don't like the plan. But anyway, that's apparently the real story about where that the name actually Australian two-up came from. Speaking of taxes, as I was a few minutes ago, it looks like there's a tax firm that's filed about 5,500 tax returns for small businesses between 2003 and 2006. And the IRS is not going to allow about $21 million in deductions. They audited about 168 of these returns and found problems with 166 of them, not a good average. And what they found was that they were, again, small business owners. They said that their service catered heavily to owners of Shackley Corporation home businesses. So these are mostly network marketers. But apparently, this particular tax firm, now not Shackley, which is actually one of the more conservative companies in the industry, nor their distributors. Now, again, this is just the tax firm that they were going to, apparently convinced them that they could take deductions on things like clothing, hair and nail care. I guess because you got to look good, right, for your opportunity meetings. I guess that was the rationalization. Tanning salons, hot tubs, I guess because you bring your prospects into the hot tub. Vacation home furniture. Maybe because, I don't know, you bring your prospects to your vacation homes and show them off. Gifts to relatives, not really sure how that can be rationalized at all. But of course, trips to Sweden, Cancun, Mexico, they list a few of them here, which of course, we have been told from people who are a little overzealous in this area that, if you do, take a trip to Hawaii, and while you're there, stick a few flyers on some windshields and write it off as a business trip. Now, most people don't advocate stuff like this, and there's some really good tax experts in the business now that really educate network marketers on the proper way to take these type of deductions. By the way, remember the tax people Renaissance? I actually went to Kansas City and testified in the Treasury Department and the U.S. Postal Service or U.S. Postal Inspector Service. They were the ones who actually took that company down, and I actually testified against Michael Cooper, who they eventually sent to prison. So I'm kind of intimately involved with that case, even some consulting with the AG back when they originally took that case on or took the action against that company. And it was interesting. It wasn't so much for being a pyramid scheme, like a lot of people think. It was because of the tax advice that they were giving and the overzealous tax advice. That in combination with people were just buying kits to qualify for centers, which is what made them the pyramid too. So that was a side thing. So obviously you can't take these types of deductions as simply as people say you can. So I don't want to get into a whole lecture here on the proper way to take tax deductions, although I could probably do that. Just want to let you know that again, the IRS does look at those types of things, and if you find a tax preparer that likes to get into those gray areas and they find something wrong with somebody else's return, they can end up checking all of them and getting you too. So you can catch some shrapnel from that. So what I personally like to do is anything that's a gray area, that I just pay taxes on it. And what I consider my extra taxes that I pay is, I just kind of think of it as my audit insurance premium. Now, if it's a major area, of course, I'll, maybe get some more information and make sure I get it right. Like, for example, this Base 105 program that I'm going to tell you about. In fact, I don't want to wait till the break. Let's do this right now since we're talking about taxes. Base 105 is actually something that I found through the Small Business Administration. And again, I know you're going to think this is just too easy, too good to be true, but as anyone who is self-employed, but then that of course applies to all of us, you have to pay essentially your own Social Security tax, your own FICA tax, which is 7.5%. And if you pay yourself, you pay twice, essentially. We're all independent contractors, and the government wants that 7.5% that you pay, then your employer matches that. Well, they want that whole 15%. So if you're self-employed, as many of you have made some money in this business probably know, you end up paying all of that yourself. So that's a pretty good chunk. Well, through this Base 105 program, well, you don't really need them, by the way. They administer the whole thing for 150 bucks a year. You can do it yourself, but it's so much easier to let them do it. But you can actually deduct all of your medical expenses, whether you itemize or not, doesn't make any difference. And anything medical related, this is dental, this is your health insurance premiums, this is your life insurance, prescriptions, eyeglasses, anything that's related to a medical expense. You can add all that up at the end of the year, deduct that from the amount that your FICA tax is applied to. That's that 7.5% or 15% in this case. So it's not like deducted from your taxable income, but it's deducted from what they apply the 15% FICA tax to for the self-employed. Now, for me personally, every single year I've saved several hundred dollars more than the 150 I've done it. Like I said, I'm about to do it for my 5th year. Last year, because of some various issues, I actually will probably end up saving over $1,000 in actual cash savings on my taxes by the amount of medical expenses I'll be able to deduct from the taxable income from my FICA tax. I have checked this out with the IRS. At the Base 105 website, they've got the documents there where they've checked it out with the IRS. My tax preparer, a company called Drew Jarrell in Fresno, where I used to live, I still work with him to this day. Dave Drew, co-owner, got 35 years experience in this business. He's checked it out. This is absolutely legitimate. You can really do this. And why this industry is oblivious to it, I have no idea. I mean, you could save more money on just this than every other aspect of this home-based business tax deductions we ever talk about, on just this one aspect alone. If you want more information about this, go to marketwaveinc.com. That's my MarketWave website. On the homepage, down at the bottom, there's a banner there. It's an orange box, says Base 105. Click on that, check it out, and have your tax preparer check it out. I guarantee it's real. I've been taking the deduction every year, and nobody said a word. So, I mean, it's tested too. I'm not taking anybody's word for this anymore. I'll be doing this for year number 5 now. So anyway, Base 105, check that out. Okay, I talked about on the last show a little bit about what I called MLM bigotry or MLM ignorance as it relates to various companies and services that don't seem to have a very high opinion of this industry, based on bigotry and ignorance, obviously, who have actually forbidden network marketers from using their services, like, for example, Verizon. Verizon actually forbids network marketers from using their platform to advertise network marketing opportunities or to use what they call their PIC codes for network marketing promotions and things like that. That's in spite of the fact that Verizon is being network marketed exclusively through a network marketing company called Lightyear Network Solutions, who, by the way, I've emailed and asked for a response about that, how they might feel about the fact that they're network marketing a service that puts them in the same category, at least on the same list of prohibited advertisers as child pornographers, terrorists, and cannibalism. Yeah, that's all on the list as well, as along with multi-level marketing companies. I haven't gotten any response from them yet. Don't expect I would probably get one by now, but at least I maybe to give them something to think about. PayPal, eBay. I mean, these are all companies that will not allow network marketing companies at all to market through their service. WordPress, I've since found out, is another one. WordPress, of course, is the one where you can create blogs and things like that, and they will not allow network marketing blogs. Not pro network marketing blogs, but even blogs just related to your specific company. However, if you start an anti-network marketing blog, as several anti-MLM zealots have done, no problem. They can stay up there. Now, for example, I found that someone actually contacted me and said that they tried to start a blog on WordPress related to Amway or Quickstar, and it was removed. They killed it. And he asked why, and they said, because, well, you're saying positive things about your company. Now, of course, people would come in and say negative things about it, too, and they would come in and defend it. Well, just the fact they were saying positive things about their company and their own blog made it promotional, and they won't allow network marketing companies to be promoted through WordPress. If any of us want to use that particular service, there's your chances of succeeding with them. Twitter, by the way, seems to be pro-MLM. In fact, there's something now called Twitter Getter, where they're going to try to network market, kind of like a chain letter, to get more people to basically onto your Twitter list. It's totally free. There's no money involved. They're just trying to, you know, geometrically progress all of their contacts, and you get put at the bottom of a list of six, and you mail it out to all those people, and they mail it out, and you just create this big giant list of people you can Twitter to. Which I can't imagine why anyone's going to want to do that, but apparently it must be working because the person at the top has over 15,000, almost 16,000 people, apparently, according to their profile there on Twitter. But at least they're pro, or at least not negative MLM. Craigslist. We can add them to the list. Craigslist has a strict prohibition against promoting anything related to network marketing, even if you want to sell your product. In other words, the thing that makes us legal, that doesn't make us a pyramid, if you want to do nothing more than that activity, that's still not allowed on Craigslist if it in any way relates to a network marketing company. So that, again, is obviously bigotry and ignorance. They're just going by the, you know, a knee-jerk response to the stigma that is out there about the industry without doing any actual research into what they're actually banning, which, by the way, is the very definition of ignorance. Ignorance does not mean dumb or stupid. It means ignorant. Ignorant. It means you're not looking at readily available facts that could easily change your mind if you would just look, and you just choose not even to look. So that's why I would call these companies ignorant. Facebook, it's not looking good for Facebook, folks, as far as being anti-MLM. I have gotten responses from several of you now that claim that you've tried to run ads on Facebook, and the only way you can do it is hide the fact that it's MLM. In fact, I got one here from somebody who said that they wanted to put an ad in for Send Out Cards. And when it said it was Send Out Cards and that it was an MLM company, it got rejected. But when they just put another sort of a more generic kind of ad that didn't imply it was MLM, but the link, of course, did, I guess they didn't click on the link and it got through. So if they know it's MLM, apparently Facebook is in fact blocking it. I still got the word out, though. If any of you have ever gotten an ad that clearly is multi-level marketing, and on Facebook would know that when they see the ad, and you got it through, let me know. So far, I'm not finding any. I got another one here from somebody that said they tried to run a Zango ad, which was promoting the juice, again, the product, but in reference to a local meeting that they were going to have, and Facebook rejected the ad simply because it was network marketing. Because their policies itself aren't too definitive about it, and their response to me is, we take it on a case-by-case basis, I'm still looking just for more evidence. And right now, everybody so far has been saying they've gotten rejected. I can't find a single example of someone that got one through, but let me know if you manage to do it. Before we put Facebook on the anti-MLM, perhaps we should boycott list. A couple of interesting articles I saw this week. One here is from a guy by the name of Phil Mulkins. You got an article called Recession Prime Time for Multi-Level Schemes. Of course, they like to put that schemes on the end sometimes when they're a bigot towards the industry and ignorant of it. But this guy, I guess, he writes a column where he responds to people who ask him questions, and it says, Dear Action Line, that's the name of the, he's the Action Line editor. It says, I remember the multi-level marketing plans of the past 20 years. Neighbors duping neighbors out of thousands. Are these still a problem? SR in Tulsa. I love how that neighbors duping neighbors out of thousands. Has that ever happened? You know, I maybe they're talking about that stereotype of, you know, the person who gets people to buy in for thousands of dollars or whatever, which doesn't even, like, maybe the old Equinox type of plan where you get your neighbors to buy in for $10,000. That, first of all, that never really even happened in Amway, even though they're always one that gets the rap for it. I mean, and network marketing companies, the vast majority of them, it's a kit and a few hundred dollars for some inventory, some sales aids, you know, to set up your business. What they're questioning doesn't even happen in the industry at all anyplace. And where it does, it usually gets shut down. But here's his response. Recessions and economic downturns always bring multi-level marketing and Ponzi schemes out of the woodwork. Like this. By the way, these same people, these same sort of anti-MLM zealots out there, what they usually get us for is how aggressive and obnoxious we are. And they talk about, I remember this guy one time came on my radio show saying, I was standing at a urinal in a restaurant. This guy stands next to me and starts pitching me on his MLM company. And I said, we all kind of did the math on it and figured out how many people were in the industry and how many people are in the United States, and said, you know, I won't go through all the math now, but it came out to an average person as they go around their daily life. Probably comes out to, as you go to the store or any place, you know, you're within speaking contact of an average of maybe 5 to anywhere to 15 network marketers a day. You know, when you're in line at the bank, trip to the grocery store, you know, you go to work, you know, wherever you go, you're always around a lot of people. You're within at least a conversation starting distance, you know, the people you're in the elevator with or whatever, of probably anywhere from 5 to 15 network marketers a day, but you just don't notice the 99.9% that don't pitch you while you're standing next to them on the urinal. But that's the only one you remember, and that's the image that everybody has. That's the brush we all get painted with. But nonetheless, it's usually just the opposite. You know, we're all over the place, and we're so aggressive, and we're almost like it's like cult-like. You know, we're just so, you know, in everybody's face. But all of a sudden, now we're coming out of the woodwork. We've been hiding. We've been in the shadows. Which is it? I wish these anti-MLM zealots would all get together, compare notes, and figure out what tack they're going to take, because they're just kind of all over the place and they completely contradict each other. Anyway, he goes on to say, they cater to the unemployed and dupe them out of money they don't have to lose. All right, now you're all professional network marketers. I assume most of you listening to the show. Let me ask you, how good a prospect is an unemployed person? I mean, isn't that someone that we usually don't pitch, or that we've been taught to not pitch, or that we teach our downline, look, unemployed people that have no income, they should probably get a job first, otherwise they're just not going to be able to do their... I mean, network marketing is not a substitute for a job. I think any good professional network marketer would agree with that. Pitching unemployed people has almost become kind of taboo in this industry today. Yet, according to Mr. Malkins, that's our prime target, people who have no money to run their business. He goes on to say, MLM Watch, which, by the way, is an anti-MLM site put out by Dr. Stephen Barrett, who is a card-carrying member of the Pyramid Scheme Alert Organization. That's that little, very prolific clique, although a small one, of anti-MLM zealots. He points out that these schemes promise great income opportunities, but that nearly all recruits lose money, and a few at the top of the pyramid are enriched at the expense of those downline. Okay, well, first of all, he's just described every corporate hierarchy in America, where the people at the bottom do most of the work and people at the top make all the money, and it's pyramid-shaped. But besides that cliche response, nearly all recruits lose money, yet the few at the top make them. Well, first of all, most recruits lose money because the vast majority of us just don't do what we're supposed to do to make money, or we don't do it long enough. Now, as in any business, certainly there are exceptions where people do really put their heart into it, they do it for a couple of years, and it just doesn't work. Some people just fail because they're not good at it for whatever reason. But the vast majority of people fail at this business because they just don't do what they're supposed to do long enough. In fact, I'm going to do a whole rant on that on another show. But it always gets me, the fact that those people who stayed in the longest, who really worked at it the longest and worked at it the hardest, which are a small percentage of the total number of distributors, are the ones who make the most money. Maybe it's because they've worked at it the longest and the hardest. They're the ones that stuck around to learn the skills, to really build their organization and build their skill set that it takes to do that. Or they've found someone else that's done it. That's the greatest thing about network marketing, how it levels the playing field. Even if you're not that good at sales or you're shy or whatever, if you find someone who is, you can make money from their activity. I mean, that's what I mean. That's why these people are so ignorant of how this business really works. I mean, imagine the thousands and thousands of people that want to be professional baseball players, and only a small percentage ever even make it to the major leagues, let alone become superstars and make $20 million a year. But what about if you could do this? What if, say for example, I'll tell you who's really got a great gig, is Alex Rodriguez's agent. Okay, Scott Boras, I believe his name is. Now, Alex Rodriguez makes $25 million a year. That's A-Rod. Okay, A-Rod makes $25 million a year. Scott Boras, his agent, like most agents, gets about, I'm guessing he gets 10-15% of that. He might make more, who knows. But of that contract, and every year now that he plays, he gets a piece of that, even though the contract's done, his business is over, kind of residual income. But that's kind of what this business is, but residual in a different way. Imagine this scenario. What if you could try to be a professional baseball player, but you just don't have the skills? You don't throw hard enough, you don't hit the ball long enough, but you could make income based on a percentage of Alex Rodriguez's salary. Based on his skills and what he does and how many home runs he hits, he'll get paid more money, and then that makes you more money even though you're just sitting in the dugout. Now, that's absurd, of course, in that scenario, but in our industry, that's exactly how it works. Okay, you could be mediocre at this business, maybe make a few hundred bucks a month or whatever, but then you suddenly enroll in Alex Rodriguez, and he becomes a superstar in this industry, you get a percentage of his income based on his skills. That's why this really levels the playing field. And you have no idea, as you do your network marketing business, where that person's going to fall. You can enroll 100 people in 5 years, and your three superstars could be your first, your fifth, and your ninth person you enroll. It could be your 91st, your 93rd, and your 99th person you enroll. You have no idea where they're going to fall. That's why you've got to stick with it. That's why you can't just join and be in for 6 months and out, or 3 weeks and out. I mean, these anti-MLM zealots keep talking about how there's like an 85% dropout rate in the first year, and then practically the same breath, they'll say 85% didn't make money. That's because 85% dropped out. I remember when Minkow was going after USANA. USANA used to publish, they still do, this chart. And this chart talks about how many average months it takes to get to certain levels in their compensation plan. And this one level where you can start really looking at full-time income, the first point where you can really think about quitting your job and doing that, at minimum it takes 18 months. But then he would, in his report, he said 85% quit the first year. So 85% quit. And by the way, most of those quit in the first few weeks. So they all quit in the first year. Vast majority aren't in it for 18 months. That's why the vast majority didn't make a full-time income. We just all quit too soon. Not the industry usually, by the way. We quit and jump to another company, but that's another story. So again, just a few examples of the types of things that people out there have this image of our industry that is so ignorant. And they are ignorant in a way that's so easily refutable if just more of us would try to do it. Like, for example, the same guy goes on to say, product-based schemes are the most expensive type of pyramid scheme, with the highest loss rates, 99.9%, far worse than most games of chance in casinos. That one really gets me. A lot of these anti-MLM zealots try to attribute the odds of success in our business to the same as like gambling, except there's one major difference. It's entirely based on luck when you go to the casino, and building a downline is based on effort. Selling product is based on effort. It's interesting how the better you get at this business and the more work you put in it for the longer period of time, you tend to make more money. How is that in any way at all like your chances of success in Vegas? There's another article I got here. Times Writer Group, Stealth Math Catches Criminals. This is by Karen Kyson. I guess the last name is C-Y-S-O-N. Okay, I'm just going to jump down to some key sound bites in her article here. She says, people such as Tom Petters and Bernie Madoff may be smooth talkers, but anyone who can do basic math should be able to quickly figure out the impossibility of the ROI, that's return on investment, promised by such schemes. Multi-level marketing programs like Ponzi scams or any other pyramid or investment fraud have the same built-in flaw. They cannot be sustained. I wonder if Ms. Kyson has ever heard of Amway, which will be celebrating, I think it's 50th anniversary next year, or Shaklee, that just celebrated their 50th anniversary last year, or that the network marketing industry is 73 years old, that there are actually 9 companies, I believe, out there that are more than a quarter of a century old, actually a lot more than that. You know, most of the publicly traded companies, where you can look at audited numbers, you can see that year after year after year, they have a net gain in distributors in the United States. I mean, until Minkow hit USANA, I think they had 20 consecutive net gains in distributors in the United States after they were 10 years old. I believe Prepaid Legal had a streak going of something like, I gotta look it up, but I think it was like 26, it was at least 26 consecutive quarters of a net gain in memberships in the United States, not opening up foreign markets because the U.S. is saturated, like they say. These are U.S. numbers. I mean, Relive, Manatech, Nu Skin, all of them just breaking records every single year. Amway's over 50 years old now, almost 50 years old, and they just had like something like a 26% overall worldwide growth, and they haven't opened up any foreign markets in a while. That was in all the countries they were in. You know, it cannot be sustained. This industry has sustained itself for decades. Old companies are still growing in the United States, but according to this author, it can't possibly work because it can't be sustained. The reason for that, by the way, is because the ignorant way of looking at this is, well, if five get five, who get five, who get five? By level 13, we've saturated the entire earth. That's what they always look at, just the simple, basic, you know, stereotype that if we were to use that scenario, they jump all over us and say how ridiculous it is, how absurd it is, because it'll never really happen. But when they want to make a case for why we can't be sustained and there's inevitable market saturation, what do they use? A five by five by five scenario to show how we're going to saturate the earth. Well, which is it? Is that inevitably something that must happen? That is why we can't survive? Or is it ridiculous and absurd and it will never happen? You got to pick one, guys. Okay, if you're going to beat us up, find, you know, give us a way to be right here. Pick one or the other because they're both completely opposite points. You can't have them both. Now, the truth is, they're completely absurd and they don't really happen, and downlines don't build 5 by 5 by 5 or 2 by 2 by 2 until they saturate the earth. It's never happened, never come even remotely close to happening. And yeah, we shouldn't be using those scenarios, by the way. They're right about that. But they are also right in that it's absurd and will never actually happen. So if it's absurd and will never actually happen, then we don't have to worry about it inevitably happening, which is why we must fail. Anyone else see the illogic in that? There's all kinds of good stuff in these articles, but I don't want to waste a lot of time on this. I want to get to some more important news. I just kind of like to pick on some of these people that really don't know what they're talking about. One of the things that really bugs me most, and because I could go a whole show on the ignorance of this particular author's comments that she's made about the industry, but at the bottom where it has a little bio, it says, "This is the opinion of Karen Kyson, a child care provider in Stearns County and vice president of the Minnesota chapter of Mensa." This is the reason why I don't brag about too much the fact that I'm a member of Mensa. I did pass the test. I not only supposedly had an IQ of 155, but when I passed the Mensa test, you have to be in the top 2% of all the people that take the Mensa test. And I was just so like proud of myself when I did that, 'cause I thought not only did I finish in the top 2%, I finished in the top 2% of all the people that thought they were smart enough to get into Mensa, who just took the Mensa test, not of the general public. But then I actually went to a meeting of the local Mensa chapter there in Fresno, where I used to live, and man, goofiest bunch of people I've ever met in my life. It doesn't not much to do with MLM, but just to give you an example, one of the little games that we play, little mental games, we come up with questions about why we, you know, thought certain things were. You know, we have explanations for things. Like, for example, when you sit inside of an airplane, why, when you only sit over the wings, do the window shades pull up? Anyone ever notice that before? You pull them down any place else, but only over the wings you pull them up. First time I noticed that, I remember thinking, okay, what else have they installed backwards on this plane or upside down? Anyway, my theory, although none of us ever came to a final conclusion on that, was it's to help block the reflection off the wing. That's my guess. I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that. I've seen it in more than one plane, so I assume it's done on purpose. But anyway, one of the questions I brought up at my meeting was, why is it that on stoplights, that cylinder that you see, it's kind of old-fashioned now, but the cylinder that extends from a street light, why does it have a gap at the bottom? Now, I had a theory, but I let them all present theirs first. And this one woman, this fellow Mensa member, said that she thought maybe it was so the water wouldn't pool inside there. And then I thought, well, but you know, they're always tilted down a little bit. It only takes 1 degree of tilt to avoid that. Plus, you know, how much water can really, I didn't think that was it. Then this other guy said that his theory was if you pulled too far into the intersection, you could still look up and see what color the light was. This was a Mensa member who apparently doesn't realize that light actually goes on pretty much infinitely, so I think it can make it past the end of that cylinder. When I proposed my theory that it was there so birds wouldn't build nests inside of it, no way. That could not possibly be it. That was logical, reasonable explanation. Completely dismissed it. I didn't know what I was talking about. Their theories were. So anyway, folks, I still got my Mensa plaque on the wall. I show it off once in a while, but I'm not so impressed with myself like I used to be. Now that I know who I'm in the top 2% of, but I digress. Got another notice here. Speaking of Dr. Stephen Barrett, on his website Quack Watch, which he's one of the hardest to refute actually, because he usually goes after the ridiculous claims that we make about our products, and in most cases, unfortunately, he's right. But he goes way overboard, of course, and he just is anti-MLM and says they're all pyramids, like Robert Fitzpatrick and John Taylor and all the other big anti-MLM zealots, in spite of decades of legal precedent to the contrary. All the state, federal regulators, and all these foreign markets, 60, 80 different countries, and for the last 70 years, they're all wrong. They don't get it. The FTC doesn't get it. AGs, they don't get it. These half a dozen anti-MLM zealots, they're the ones who really know what's going on, and everybody else is wrong, I guess. Anyway, he also has a thing here about how multivitamins have just flunked another big prevention trial. And there's been a few of these recently, where very large studies of thousands of people, where they've given vitamin E, vitamin C, vitamin A, and they see if there's any kind of preventive aspect. Of course, most of it's focusing on cancer. This particular one was a study of just postmenopausal women, and they found no association between the use of multivitamins and the risk of cancer, cardiovascular disease, and just overall death rate. But there's myriad diseases this could possibly benefit. But anyway, they've tested these again on thousands of people and found that these don't really see any difference. There isn't any increase in mortality or decrease. There's just, it doesn't look like taking mega doses of multivitamins is preventing people from getting cancer or whatever. But here's the part that when people like Stephen Barrett like jump up and down with glee and say, oh, look, all these MLM companies are selling you a bunch of stuff you don't really need, which is his angle he takes with this, of course, because these multivitamins. We get that, okay, if you have all the vitamins and minerals that you need out of your diet, you need a normal, healthy diet, so we'll call that a baseline of zero. If you start taking mega doses of all of these vitamins and minerals, so we'll call that all the way up to 1,000, like way more than you need, that looks like it's not doing a lot to prevent disease. And there's some pretty good evidence there that's saying that. But that's not why we take vitamins. At least it shouldn't be. What happens to the people, and this is what the study should really be on, not just random people out there, but what about people who, because by the way, most people who take vitamins tend to be healthy people. People who supplement tend to be people who also make the green shakes and jog and stuff like that. They're into that kind of thing. Okay, what if we were to take the average American that eats a very poor diet, eats a lot of processed foods, and doesn't eat very often, actually, like me, hardly at all day, and then one huge meal before I go to bed. I know, don't email me, I know that's horrible, I'm trying to not do that anymore, but what about the average American? 30% of us that are like overweight and almost morbidly obese now? Like a third of the population is bordering on morbidly obese? Like, that's how much overweight we are as a society because of the crappy food that we eat. All right, so what about those people that on that baseline are at a minus 50 or minus 100, and all you do is take them up to zero? Okay, you take them up to where they're supposed to be so they no longer have a deficiency. Not that they have all the vitamins and minerals they need, and you mega-dose them so they have way more than they need, which is what these studies are really looking at, but the people who are deficient in these vitamins and you simply give them what they need and put them back up where they're supposed to be, what kind of health benefit would happen to those people? And these studies aren't studying that. So that's why we supplement, and that motivation to do it is not what these studies are disproving. Greg Caton. Now, some of you, you know what, I'm going to save Greg until after the break, and we'll talk about him and get into a little bit more about Kevin Trudeau, what the FTC has just done to him, and Barry Minkow, and USANA, and what's going on with Zengo. We'll do all of those here after the break. But I'm a little behind schedule here because I ranted and got off on too many tangents as usual. So we'll take a break and we'll be back in 2 minutes with the rest of the show.
Since 1992, Telecenter has been the ultimate lead capture and communication tool for direct sales professionals. Telecenter is a toll-free number you will use in all of your advertising to provide 24/7 recorded information about your company, products, and opportunity. As prospects listen to the pre-recorded messages, the system pre-qualifies them for you and then instantly notifies you via text, phone, and email. The constant flow of fresh, qualified leads will drive momentum into your business. Telecenter even captures every caller's phone number, their name and address when available, serves as a 24/7 fax system, provides a 25-user conference bridge, an ad tracker to define your best advertising responses, and so much more. With a simple flat rate price, over 35 included features, and no service contract, Telecenter is the right choice for successful direct sellers. Learn more and sign up online now by going to www.telecentersignup.com/marketwave or by finding the Telecenter banner in the MLM resources section of marketwaveinc.com.
Imagine tapping into an endless supply of free leads on the internet. Imagine being able to pick and choose who you talk to while completely eliminating rejection from the process. My name is Max Steinberg, and if you have an hour a day, I can show you how to add a new client, customer, or distributor to your business every day. To learn more, go to www.maxsteingart.com and you'll receive a copy of my best-selling training, Words to Wealth. I can help you eliminate all of the barriers to your success. Go to www.maxsteingart.com.
Welcome back to Inside Network Marketing. This is Len Clements. I still feel like I need to say, if you've just joined us, I did that last show too. It's my old radio habits. But I do want to at least get another plug. If you want any information about me and what my company does, MarketWave, go to marketwaveinc.com. It's totally generic. No companies are pitched there. We do have in the little fun section, you can see a parody website that I did of a goofy company that I did an April Fool's joke. By the way, when you go to look at the company Free Lunch International, click on the conference call on the homepage. I did more work putting that conference call together than I did the entire site. So when no one's finding the conference call, it's a kind of funny conference call, kind of based on a true story, something that really happened. It's an exaggeration, but one time with my getting people to hit the *6 to mute people out. Yeah, so check that out. There is on there, you can vote for your favorite company. I know most people usually just gang vote for their own company. But on this one, you have to vote for a minimum of 3. You can vote for up to 10. So you've got to put another companies in there that you also like. So I get a better, more fairer representation of who people are really liking out there in the industry. I've also, by the way, I've stuck in some dummy companies on that list. And anyone who votes for a company that doesn't exist, because I just made it up, all your votes get exempt. Because I know what you're doing. You're voting for your company and you're intentionally picking 2 companies that you think will never be, you know, in the top 10, and you're wasting the other 2 votes just to kind of like manipulate the system. So you better vote for somebody you also like. So anyway, but there's a lot of cool stuff on the website, so check it out. And you can also, of course, check out my books and tapes and stuff like that that I sell and actually make money at, unlike this show. Greg Caton was a guy back in the 90s who was an ex-partner with people that started Nutrition for Life. It was called Consumer Express at the time. And they ended up buying him out. The company then went public, made a whole bunch of money. He was a little upset that he wasn't part of making all of that money and various other personal issues that he had. So long story short, he wrote a book called MLM Fraud. It was supposed to be a handbook for network marketers and prospects to know, you know, how to determine which companies are legitimate and which companies are bad and so forth. And the entire thing was pretty much an expose of Nutrition for Life. It was his vendetta book, essentially. It's all it was. Made up stuff out of thin air. I mean, some of it wasn't even based on actual events. So he was just really, really mad at him, wanted to get back at him, so he wrote this really lousy book. Well, I read the book, and I reviewed it in my newsletter, which was called Market Wave. It was a paper newsletter actually mailed out at the time. And I remember at the time, Corey Augenstein, who does the MLM Insider website, MLMinsider.com. He reviewed it in his magazine at the time, too. Both of us just trashed the book. We gave it a really lousy review, and some of it was pretty nasty. So we actually went to Houston and toured the facility, met the owners. I mean, we really, you know, did some due diligence to find out if there was any truth to any of the thing that was in there. There wasn't. Completely made up. He was just mad at him. By the way, they ended up suing him for libel and won. And he also trashed Kevin Trudeau, which used to be a Nutrition for Life, and I think Kevin Trudeau sued him for libel, and if I remember correctly, I think he won too. I remember at the time, I think Randy Gage also must have gotten on his bad side for some reason. I know what it was. It was his boot camps. Corey and I wrote a negative review of his book. Then we wrote a positive review of Randy Gage's boot camp. And so Greg Caton decided he was going to get back at us for doing a negative review of his book, and he ordered a new updated version of MLM Fraud and put a whole chapter in there about us MLM watchdogs, myself, Corey, trashed Randy, of course, because he had to go after him somehow because we promoted his event, so his event had to be bad to make us look bad. Again, most of it, just stuff he made up out of thin air. He actually put a website up just to attack me, and it wasn't even things based on actual events that were embellished. I mean, he literally just pulled stuff straight out of his thin air. And so anyway, that's the kind of guy he was. He was also arrested for counterfeiting at one time. He was also arrested eventually for making medical claims about a product that supposedly was based on sulfuric acid, which is battery acid. And the FDA, FTC came in and shut him down. I'm really giving you the Reader's Digest version of the story. Sent him to prison. He did 3 years. Did 3 years in prison. He came out. He was supposed to do 3 years probation. Into his second year of probation. Now remember, he only had about a year of probation left. He's done his time. He's out of prison. He puts in a request to go out of the country. Because you have to do that. You have to ask permission to leave the country when you're on probation. And he was denied that and was asked to return his passport. By the way, originally before he went to prison, he was denied parole because they thought he was a flight risk. Yeah, good call on somebody. Because he left the country anyway. Went down to South America. No one's seen him since. And he's still down there. He's got a website, and he says he's down there. You know, he's not hiding the fact he's down there, but he's down in South America now with a year left on probation. He fled the country and violated his parole. So how I found this out was, some of you get the newspaper on a Sunday. There's a little insert in there called Parade, February 8th edition of Parade. On the front cover, it said, "Who are the world's most wanted?" And you got a bunch of really scary-looking people around the front. And, of course, Osama bin Laden is on there. And this guy from El Salvador who murdered people and escaped from jail with tattoos all over his forehead. And so a lot of, again, a lot of scary people here. But as I look inside, they have a little subsection of Americans on the run. They feature four people, and it looks like they're mugshots. And one of them is Greg Caton. You probably saw that coming. Convicted of selling fake harmful cancer drugs and other meds to duped consumers. He is one of, apparently, the most wanted, because he's on the run now. So most of you probably won't really appreciate that, but I know a lot of you back in the 90s remembered Greg, remember all of his little shenanigans back then. I thought you might find that amusing. And Salt Lake Tribune recently published an article just a few days ago about the a judgment against USANA Health Sciences of $7 million by a distributor that was wrongfully terminated, allegedly. The single arbitrator ruled in their favor. That's always something, of course, where there's going to be a big risk. It really is a crapshoot. When you have a jury of 12 people, you got a much better chance of getting a valid judgment than when you have an arbitrator of one person. I've been in situations like this before where, not personally, but with other people I know, when you've got a single arbitrator, no matter how positive you think you are, you've got a case, don't count your chickens for their hats, because anything can happen. And apparently that's what happened here. I'm not going to mention any names because I've not interviewed them or anything, but just bottom line is this was a couple that was one of the top distributors in USANA several years ago, and they claimed they were making $600,000 a year. $600,000 a year. Then their daughter left to sign up in Isagenics, and they wanted to get a product from their daughter out of Isagenics. So what they did was, rather than simply buying it retail, or like, remember, they're making $600,000 a year, so rather than paying $39 for it instead of $25 for it, Or their daughter could have just said, I'll give my own parents a break and sell it to them at her cost. Although if I was her parents, I'd be a little embarrassed to accept a deal like that, considering I'm making $600,000 a year. But instead, they decide to enroll as a distributor in the other network marketing company. Now, that alone, by the way, doesn't violate USANA's policies and procedures or distributor agreement. But when you try to entice other distributors to also move over or to join you in your downline in the other company, which is what they were accused of, then that does. Now, again, I'm just looking at this logically. There's a gag order on the final judgment, so we can't ask either side what really went on here. They're not allowed to talk about it. But again, I'm going to look at this logically. So why would you sign up as a distributor in a company just to get the product because you want to help your daughter out and buy some product from them? You're making $600,000 a year. Okay, so why would you even want to do anything, you know, that might even remotely put that income in jeopardy by creating the suspicion that you could be recruiting because you enrolled as a distributor in that company? Why else would you want to do it? We can get it a little cheaper, but you're making $600,000. If this was someone making $600 a year, I could see why they'd want to save a few bucks on the product. Making $600,000 a year, you don't do anything to jeopardize that. Even give the appearance you might be jeopardizing from it, especially when the previous 6 months or so, since all of that went down, there was a mass exodus of distributors from USANA that went over to Isagenics. A lot of leaders left at that time, which was, again, this is back several years ago. But right at the coattails of that, all the more reason why you want to look like you're not one of them, right? Don't you want to not jeopardize that income and just pay a few extra bucks? Anyway, only reason I can think of why they want to do that is because they would want to recruit other people over into the other company. Well, apparently USANA offered them the ability to get reinstated and have all be forgiven if they would just give them a list of what their downline looked like in Isagenics, at least under their daughter's downline. And the reason I'm assuming that USANA requested this is because it's actually typical in the industry for people, when they want to move kind of stealthily from one company to the other, that they sign up under a family member's name to kind of stay under the radar for a while. Now, I'm not saying this particular couple did this, but again, when it creates all that much more circumstantial evidence that you did, why would you want to create even the semblance of impropriety when there's so much at risk? So, anyway, and they said, well, that's their daughter's business. It's none of USANA's business. You know, I kind of see the point where it's like, okay, it's their daughter's business in Isagenics. It has nothing to do with us. So we don't really think that's a fair request. I kind of see their point, except, again, look at this logically. Forget the letter of the rule. Their daughter knows their parents' $600,000 a year income could be saved if she would just voluntarily give it up. I mean, on principle, I get why she might resist that, but got nothing to hide, right? There's no USANA distributors in there. Look, save my parents' $600,000 income. No problem. I agree, Mom and Dad, I shouldn't be asked to do this. It's not fair. I'm just going to do it because we got nothing to hide. To save your $600,000. Yeah, something's really fishy about this because, of course, they refused to do that. So anyway, I don't think too many people really join other companies as distributors and then don't want to show you who's in your downline when you're making $600,000 a year unless you got something to hide, I would think. But there's certainly some interesting questions there that'll probably never be answered. By the way, that is the first successful, and by the way, I'm familiar a lot with USANA and their policies and so forth. It's one of those companies where you got to really try hard to get terminated. I'm an acquaintance with someone who was a very high-level distributor with them a few years ago who was terminated, and I heard his version of the story secondhand, and then I heard USANA's version of the story, and I got the chance to ask him to his face in person, tell me your version of the story. And so he got to tell me his own version again right from the horse's mouth. And I remember leaving that conversation, liking the guy personally, by the way, but still totally believing he was rightfully terminated even after hearing his version of the story last. So yeah, it's tough to get terminated. You get a lot of warnings. You got to really be breaking the rules in that company to get terminated. I know that for a fact. They don't just terminate. I mean, remember, people think like, well, companies terminate top-earning distributors to save money. You know, if they're making $10,000 a month or $600,000 a year, if you terminate them, you save all that money. Well, and again, this gets kind of technical, and I don't want to get into this in a lot of detail now, but no, they don't. Okay, they absolutely do not. And again, this is, gets really convoluted, but when a company pays out, you know, let's say 45%, and somebody's making $10,000 a month, and you remove them from the hierarchy, okay, that income is still paid. It's just absorbed to more people upline. It's just redistributed upline. I'll give you a very simple, basic example of this. Let's say that you have a downline, and the widest point of your downline, because they're diamond-shaped, by the way, not pyramid-shaped, is on your seventh level, and your plan only pays down six levels. So you've got maybe 500 people on level six, you've got 800 people on level seven, but you only get paid six levels. Well, if someone anywhere in those seven levels, let's say someone on your first level, were to get terminated, and almost every plan has roll-up and compression now, well, they get terminated, their position gets removed, everybody rolls up. So, yeah, the company saves the $10,000 a month they were paying them, but didn't that, those 800 people that were on your seventh zero commission level just now move up to your sixth level that you get paid on? So, again, oversimplified example, and there's many other ways that this occurs, but a company, you just have to take my word for it, a company's commission expense does not go down by terminating that distributor. It simply gets redistributed on upline. So it's not a cost savings. It will only hurt a company to terminate a top distributor because they leave and they typically try to bring their groups with them. Smart companies like Nu Skin, for example, or Mattel, you know, back when it was still an MLM company before they merged, you know, the Braco family left to start to New Vision. And as I understand it, Mattel never terminated them. I know people that have left Nu Skin to start other companies, and they didn't terminate them, which is smart, because if you don't terminate them, they've got no incentive to raid their downline because they're still making money. It's completely residual from the old company. As soon as you terminate them, well, they're going to raid their downline and try to move them. So you don't want a top-earning distributor to leave. It will always cost you money. You would only do that if you absolutely had to. There has to be a really, really good reason to terminate someone who's making $600,000 a year. You don't just do it because you felt like it or because of a little misunderstanding or something. Anyway, oh, man, I'm already at the one-hour point and haven't even gotten to Kevin Trudeau or Barry Minkow or what's going on with Zree. But you know what? That's all right, because Kevin Trudeau stuff's kind of getting to be old news anyway. Just long story short, the FTC's actually banned him now from all types of infomercials because of his book about weight loss cures they don't want you to know about. They finally said, look, you've done deceptive stuff long enough, you don't get to do anything. But I'll give you more details about that in a future show. As far as what's going on with Zree and Barry Minkow, I'm working on a lot more information. There's a lot more digging to be done there. I'd rather not do that piece of meal anyway, so I kind of blow all those out at one time when I got a lot of good information together, because I haven't gotten the half of it yet. And like I said, it's there's no shortage of dirt to be digging up right now, but I got some pretty interesting stuff that's going to get revealed here, so I want to do those justice, so I'll do that on the next show, perhaps the following one, since I think probably most of the next show I'm going to really try to focus on Mr. Lindauer in my interview with him. My first occupant of the kitchen. If you didn't join the first show, that's what I call the segment, call it the kitchen, as in if you can't stand the heat, stay out of. So this is a place where my subject understands that I get to ask pretty much anything. They don't have to answer them all, of course, but you know it's going to be a tough interview. It's not the little softball questions like you usually get. So anyway, we'll see what that turns out to be. But before I go, I do at least want to mention real quick about this X-Go Pro thing, mainly just to kind of put the call out for some more information if anybody knows more about this. What I've gathered so far is that X-Go Pro is going to network market with the exact same line of sponsorship and a similar compensation plan as Zengo, although totally separate from Zengo, nothing to do with corporate. They're going to network market the Zengo tools and training. I know, based on tons of legal precedent, that if you network marketed tools and training, like if Zengo were to do that, that would be indicative of an illegal pyramid because you would have to recruit to make money. Only new recruits would ever buy the tools. In fact, that's why California is suing YTV Travel right now, like we talked about on the last show, because most of the money has come from the sales aids, from the website that you book the travel through, not from the travel. Most of the pyramid cases in the past have been around people paying things that only distributors would buy, where there isn't any realistic possibility to resell it to an end user customer. In other words, someone who generally wants the product just for the value of the product. I mean, think about this. How can the last person in make money? That's the question you ask on this particular income stream without the act of recruiting. Now, the last person in Zango can make money easily. You buy the product, mark it up, and resell it. You don't have to have a downline to make money. But how can the last person in this XGO Pro deal make money without recruiting more people? Because only the recruits would buy the stuff. Now, making it a separate entity, I'm not really sure how that saves them. But again, I got to figure out, because I've tried to get information. I've gotten some response from them, but they're being very vague and ambiguous about exactly how the plan's going to work. But I do know of a situation where there's a group called Team in Focus. This was a group of Amway Diamonds a few years ago that tried to do essentially the exact same thing as a totally separate entity from Amway. It was an Amway corporate doing this. They were going to take the Amway tapes and tools business and they were going to multi-level market it. And Amway itself put the kibosh on it. They came back to them and said, no, we think that would make us a pyramid scheme. You can't network market tapes and tools. You got to stop doing that. And by the way, they already went ahead and did it because apparently their attorney that they hired to look over this system told them they could do it. I believe that was a guy by the name of Ted Lindauer. You know, Amway said, no, you can't do that. And they did not give them permission to do it, by the way, which is why a lot of those, I mean, nine, I think, Amway diamonds got terminated because they wouldn't stop doing it. They terminated nine diamonds. I would think with what knowledge I have of it right now, Amway probably got that right. I don't know how you can make money from selling the tapes and tools that are specific to a particular company without recruiting. But anybody out there knows what the compensation plan is going to look like and knows whether or not Zango Corporate has in fact approved this, because when I ask XGO Pro, again, somebody, it just says XGO Pro team. It's a generic response. I don't know who the person is that's responding to me, but they have insinuated pretty clearly that because they're a third party, a separate company, that they don't need Zango's approval. That's pretty much what they said. And I would think that they would. I've also asked them twice now if they have an MLM attorney or someone who knows that industry very well who has reviewed their program, and they've ignored that question twice. So do they have an attorney? Who is it? Has Zango Corporate approved this? Do they even know about it? I assume they would by now. But have they endorsed this and approved it? Those are the two major questions that I would want to ask. And I guess if they have, why do they not think that this would be legally problematic, considering the only way you can make money is by recruiting Zango distributors? There's no other possible way for the revenue stream to occur that commissions are paid from. So, it's not rhetorical questions. I'm putting them out there. Anybody listening to this have some answers for that, can help me, guide me. I'll certainly clear this up if I got it all wrong on the next show. Don't want to implicate anyone unnecessarily, so let me know. I'm still trying to find out. Nobody seems to want to give me some straight answers. So, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and wrap this up for today. Next week, I will be doing the Ted Lindauer interview. Hopefully, we'll be producing the show the following weekend and get this out to you. I'm going to keep these coming out, I think, at this point, at least once every couple of weeks, hopefully maybe even every week, because there's still so much stuff that I haven't got to. There's a bunch of stuff from the first show I still didn't get to that I was going to move over to this show if I had time. That's it for today. Again, thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back in the next few days. Keep checking the podcast section of MarketWaveInc.com. And also sign up, of course, for MarketWave Alerts, where every new podcast will be announced once they come out. And I will see you all back here on the next show. Thanks a lot. Get the word out. Appreciate it. See you then. Bye-bye.